Welcome to the Talking Legal Ed podcast with Professors Linda Jellum and Billy Joe Kaufman. In each episode, we explore cutting-edge legal issues with renowned legal scholars and teachers. In these explorations, we discuss the legal doctrines implicated in the issues we tackle. But perhaps more importantly, we look at how legal educators can bring these issues alive in the classroom.
Linda, we're going to be talking today to Tony Verona, who's the Dean of the Seattle Law School. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. He's going to be talking about deaning, and we should get started soon.
Well, I understand he's a colleague and former associate dean that you worked with while at American. And I'm really interested. I understand while he was in his first year at deanship at Miami that he had an incredible fundraising year, despite it being the year of COVID. So I'm curious to see how that went. So I hope we'll get some insights.
Okay. Well, we used to say we were partners in crime. I don't know if that's a very good thing, but we used to have a lot of fun. So let's get started talking with Tony. Well, good evening, Tony. It is just a real pleasure for me that you have joined us on Talking Legal Ed. And I remember, I think I met you over 20 years ago.
Yes.
Doing a site visit at PACE. And the interesting thing about that was I actually thought at that time, this guy's going to be a dean. So I'm glad you made my future predictions.
I very much miss working with you, BJ. You were one of the highlights of my time at American. So I'm very glad to be reconnecting with you now.
Well, I used to say we were partners in crime, but
we were.
That may not be something we want recorded. Well, you have been incredibly successful. And what led you to this? I know you enjoy teaching so very much, but I know you first came into AU and did the director of the SGG program, which clearly needed direction, and then moved to the academic deaning and vice deaning and then deaning. So you had plenty of time to get off the off ramp if you wanted to. So what do you love about it?
Well, Billy Joe, I think you and I both had the very good fortune of working with Dean Claudio Grossman, who is a record holder as being the longest serving minority law school dean. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Claudio instilled in me was this love of administrative service. And he really modeled for us so well how one could be of tremendous service to a community from these various positions. And one of the things that I always think about Claudio saying was that you have to be a dean to everyone, right? And so the need to be a very good listener, to be present, to be having conversation with not just all of the faculty members, but with students, but you know, the hallway walks, office to office drop-ins, getting to know alums. And there are moments, and Claudio was so wonderful about this, there are moments outside of public view where a dean or an associate dean can be of tremendous service. And I think of it as a secular ministry to colleagues in their most difficult moments and students at some of their most difficult moments. And so, you know, those are some of the things that motivate me the most. And the other really overarching quality to deaning that I cherish is that I am a first generation working class immigrant from Cuba who has benefited enormously from being a naturalized citizen in this country. And so I view serving as a law professor and as a leader in legal ed as a very modest way of giving back some of the enormous benefits that I have gotten from being an American citizen.
So if I hear you, Tony, what I'm hearing you say is that service and being interested and wanting and being willing to do service to all of the constituents is one of the things that leads to a successful deanship. What are a couple other things that you would say also help you or anyone be a successful dean?
I think there are, well, there are many things that lead to success, and there are many ways of being a successful dean. I think what is common to successful deanships are making sure that you are a good listener, that you are high energy, that you show up, that you do the work, that you articulate a vision that is shared by the community and that reflects the community well, and, you know, really listen and then have that vision be a truly collective vision. And then fundraising is very key, making sure that you are connected to the national legal ed landscape, that one is very much connected to alums, and that one also can see what's on the horizon in legal ed. Those are just some of the qualities, some of the tasks that I think are at the top of the list, but the list is rather long.
You know, Tony, one thing that I thought was amazing is you did so much fundraising during the COVID pandemic when many of our schools just put everything on pause. And it wasn't like Florida wasn't hit by COVID. It certainly wasn't like Miami wasn't hit by COVID. But you were just out there, small ways, bigger ways, being successful, just like the little engine that could. Was it hard? Because that was your first deanship, and who would have thought you would have been doing that in COVID? So couldn't have been easy.
Well, you know, I was blessed at Miami BJ, and I am blessed now at Seattle U working with really extraordinary directors of alumni relations and development, or at Miami, an assistant dean who truly is one of the best fundraisers with whom I've ever partnered. Fundraising is something that I enjoy a tremendous amount in doing, in planning for, in strategizing around, and in executing. It's something that I learned to do when I was at the Human Rights Campaign many, many, many years ago. And it was there where I learned that fundraising is about cultivating relationships. It is about emotion. It is about making sure that, again, we are doing a lot of listening, a lot of understanding what it is that stakeholders want to do with their legacies. What is it that is important to them and that will be able to leave behind something of great value. And at Miami and here at Seattle, I've been blessed with alumni that really care a great deal about their institutions and that sort of give back and reach down as they have climbed the ladder of success. And so that's made a very, very big difference. Having committed alums, having committed donors, having fundraising colleagues, development and alumni relations colleagues that are phenomenally talented, those all make a very big difference. But yes, COVID was a moment of tremendous crisis where our students were, and more than a moment, many, many moments, where our students really were suffering tremendously. Many of them at law schools across the country were all of a sudden finding themselves with, you know, facing food insecurity, housing insecurity, positions that they would have never expected to have faced. And so it was our responsibility as law school leaders to do everything that we could do to get out there and raise funds. And so, and the other thing that was very important, I thought, for me to do was to demonstrate to our stakeholders at Miami, and John and I will be doing something very similar next week at my installation here at Seattle. It was very important for me to announce our major gift to the institution and make sure that our donors and our prospective donors understood that my skin was in the game too. And so I'm looking forward to announcing a big gift from us next week, and that, you know, hopefully will lead to other Seattle Law stakeholders joining us.
You know, Tony, you and John are a true partnership, and maybe one of the best weddings I was ever at. What I think was always so gracious is not only did you lead and create the Hispanic student group, but you invited all of those students into your home many, many times. And I think some of that personal attachment shows a different level of listening.
Thank you, BJ.
When you bring someone in your home, that's just different. So it was always well noticed.
Thank you, BJ. Well, it was a true honor to be the faculty advisor to that student organization and to the Lambda group. And we had wonderful students at AU. You and I were very blessed in that way.
I read about them all the time.
Let me ask you a question, Tony. As someone who is Facebook friends with you, you have a skill and a talent for using Facebook to trumpet the accomplishments of students, faculty, staff, alum. How do you find time for that? And why do you do that on top of everything else you have going on?
Linda, it's one of the pleasures of being a dean to be able to celebrate my wonderful faculty colleagues, my extraordinary alums, our wonderfully well-rounded students, our incredibly gifted staff. I just love it. And so it only takes 10 seconds to take a selfie with these people as I've, you know, ended lunches and meetings. Sometimes I just, you know, with their permission, of course, take a selfie and post it with a little bit of a line about, you know, how is it that this person or these people are doing extraordinary work? And what I find is that it costs absolutely nothing. It does not take very long at all. And it really recognizes those people who are oftentimes undersung or completely unsung heroes in our respective institutions. I also find that when we have very distinguished visitors here at the school and we promote those visits on Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook, that oftentimes they are signal boosted. They are viralized by colleagues elsewhere who congratulate whoever it is we are celebrating. And so again, it's costless. It doesn't take very much time. But it is a very nice way of showcasing what makes us such a special school, and that is our people, our faculty, our staff, our students, alums. This is a very special community, and I just love sharing it with the world.
I'm sure when you had the opportunity to leave Miami, there were a lot of deanships open. There are this year, so if you know of candidates, please share them with Mercer. but how does one choose the right deanship for themselves?
That's such a great question, BJ. I had the very good fortune last year of being nominated to a lot of deanships around the country. And so I was able to be very, very selective and really only participated in 5 searches after having done a lot of due diligence and a lot of research into the various nominations. And so I only went with those schools with which I knew I would have a very good, strong fit. And what I mean by fit is a connection between my vision, or I should say among my vision for the school or my preliminary vision, and that of the law school community, and very important, the university leadership. If I found that I could contribute towards the pursuit of a very ambitious, bold vision that was aligned with the goals of the law school and the university leadership too, where the university leadership respected and appreciated their law school, then I thought that that was the best kind of fit for me. So I had the tremendous good fortune of, at the end of that process of those 5 candidacies, I had a bunch of offers or opportunities for deanships around the country. I could not say no to Seattle University. I just couldn't say no. This is such a special community, wonderful faculty. You and I have known a number of these faculty colleagues for a long time, BJ. And John and I, as you might remember, used to vacation in Seattle every year. This is a wonderful city. We have such a great curriculum here and so much opportunity. The Jesuit Catholic mission is very important to me. It's rooted in social justice, public interest, excellence, innovation. Seattle as a brand, right, as a city is all about the future, innovation, creative disruption. We are Seattle's law school, and so we're all about that too. So it's an exciting place to be dean, and to top it all off, I could not possibly say no to the wonderful president Eduardo Peñalver, who became our president here last year, and he's doing a wonderful, truly spectacular job leading our university into the future. And our provost, Dr. Shane Martin, is simply superb. So they personally recruited me, and I could not be happier. So those are the things that I would really look to: fit, vision alignment, and how a candidate feels in terms of sort of where your what your brain is telling you, what your heart is telling you, and what your gut is saying. And if they're all saying that a school would be a good fit, then that's probably where you should go.
So, Tony, I don't know if you know, I began my law school career at Seattle U back when it was actually the University of Puget Sound.
I do, Linda.
That was a long, long time. And I was not there for long. I started in legal writing and have obviously moved on. But it is a great school, great colleagues who were there. So let's say I'm starting back over in my career very early on. And I think, well, you know, at some point, I want to be like Tony. I want to grow up and be a dean at a great school like Seattle U. What kinds of things would a faculty member, either new or someone long established, what kind of experiences would be good to get? Obviously, associate dean, but what else? You know, what kinds of things would prepare you for the role that you have currently?
Yeah, that's such a good question. The skills that we develop as a law professor can be very different from those that we deploy as a dean. but that is not to say that one can't develop the necessary skills while we are a law professor. So for me, the most important experiences really have proven to be the work that I did as an academic dean and then a vice dean for quite a while. I had the good fortune of working on the senior leadership team at AUWCL with BJ and other wonderfully skilled colleagues for quite a number of years. And that experience was invaluable to me. But academic deaning and vice deaning aren't the only paths. So if you, and I had some of this other experience too, if you, in your practice years, led a legal department or exercised other kinds of leadership responsibilities, then that will come in handy. To the extent that you have served on national boards of directors or regional boards of directors where there's a significant fundraising obligation, that can be very worthwhile experience. To the extent that you have led important and influential committees that have a complicated list of tasks to accomplish, then that's something else that is of value. So just basically developing a style and form and skill set as a leader would be what you need to do in order to end up being effective as a dean. But there are many ways of getting there. There is not just one route.
You know, Tony, I mentioned when we first began about what a wonderful professor and instructor, and you loved your students and teaching. And one of the things that I thought was significant is a lot of schools have a dean for scholarship, but you thought the importance of the pedagogy piece of our work was important enough that we should devote lunch and learns and brown bags to that. And you even extended those to adjuncts. Are you still doing that thing, same kind of thing, or still encouraging
Yes.
your deans to do that?
Absolutely, BJ. This is something, as you know, I feel very strongly about. Not only do we as legal educators need to be very strong scholars, but excellence in teaching is also something that we have to develop individually. And so, yes, at both Miami and here at Seattle, I've been working with wonderful vice deans for intellectual life, which is a position that I created at Miami and now here again at Seattle U. And Lily Levy was just a superb vice dean for intellectual life at Miami. And I have another superb vice dean for intellectual life here, Deborah Ahrens. And Deborah has been working on pedagogy best practice workshops. And we are also developing a new awards program, BJ. Mm-hmm. You might remember that you and I worked together on an awards program at AU. We are launching one here at Seattle U Law to recognize faculty excellence in scholarship and teaching and service and staff excellence too. And yes, adjuncts are a very important part of what we do in discussing pedagogical best practices, because oftentimes the best teaching that our students receive is really coming from our adjunct colleagues. So the other thing that I do is to make sure that in the annual review template that I distribute to all of my faculty colleagues, that there are questions on teaching contributions and excellence and teaching innovations. And so to the extent that our colleagues have been active in those endeavors, then I really want to hear about that when I dole out merit increases year after year. And then finally, I think it's important for deans when we can to be active in the classroom. So not only continue to publish, but also to the extent that we can, but also from time to time to teach, so that we could stay in touch with the students and understand what some of the challenges that our colleagues are facing semester to semester might be. But yes, pedagogy and teaching excellence, very important.
So I assume you're not teaching in your first year.
No.
That would be a bit much.
That's right.
But what when you were at Miami maybe, or what are you planning at Seattle U, what courses do you teach as dean? Because, you know, I'm thinking probably not like a business taxation class. That might be a bit much, but but maybe a seminar or something. I don't know. What is your area that you're interested in teaching with students that works for you?
Linda, at Miami, I taught with a number of wonderful colleagues, co-taught a special seminar that we put together on leadership in crisis. And so, and we used the real world COVID crisis as the basis from which to teach that course. And so that was a very important experience. Now, I only taught one long session, but it was a very, very enjoyable experience for me. And I think one that the students were grateful for. Here, I have started to talk with my academic dean about possibly teaching a foundational introduction to law course that will be offered to undergraduate students, possibly as part of our launch of a new law minor for the undergraduate students. And so that's maybe something that I will teach. And it's entirely possible that in future years, I'll teach one section of contracts or administrative law or some of the other courses that I used to teach. But certainly not in this first year, Linda. You're absolutely right. That would be too much to ask for.
Tony, I know your family is a big piece of your heart, and you often talk, you started our conversation tonight about being an immigrant, and I know you were so proud of your father and his business and your mother and just even how good they were to the dogs and the fur babies. I think they would be very proud of you. Did they envision this for you?
Oh, BJ, that's such a wonderful question. I don't think so. I think they were, my mother was able to see me named as dean at the University of Miami Law School. I think for her, it was almost unreal. In having her talk about it and others talk about it, it was a sort of culmination of our family's American dream experience. And it's a testament to how special of a country we have for a family to arrive here, a couple, first generation children, right? Well, they only had me at the time, and then a couple of years into their immigrant experience here in the US, they had my brother. But they literally, or we literally, came to this country with nothing, with the clothes on our backs, and my parents really created an American dream experience for us through very, very hard work and the help of many people. And it is something that in one generation, we were able to enjoy so many benefits of what this nation has to offer. And that is opportunity and so much else. And so, yes, and it's one of the wonderful things that I have to experience from my students, in that we ended up buying a home just three blocks away from the law school here. And I have the good fortune of walking to school every morning. And sometimes some of our students' paths coincide with mine. And so I'm able to have little conversations with our students in the early mornings. And sometimes a student comes up to me and shares that they're struggling, that they don't feel like they are a part of the community just yet. There might be a bit of imposter syndrome. And so I could share with them my own experiences of how I had my own versions of imposter syndromes. And so living this American dream experience as a first generation immigrant, Hispanic, openly gay, et cetera, who's benefited so much from this nation and the legal profession, I can sort of bear witness to what is to come and how it really does get better to some of these students whom I just feel so much familiarity with, and I see myself in, and maybe vice versa.
So let me ask a question that perhaps our producer, David Ritchie, might be interested in the answer. I think he would tell you that we as law professors have the best job in the world.
Yes.
What on earth would lead someone, what character would lead someone to want to leave the best job in the world to take on a job that I think is exceedingly difficult these days?
Linda, it's such a good question. And it goes back to what we discussed some minutes ago. Sometimes it's the moments, the conversations, the meetings, the difficult decisions that are outside of public view, that are a form of secular ministry, that are a form of service that I find to be very enriching, sometimes very beautiful and poignant. And I get a lot from, in terms of personal satisfaction, knowing that I've been of service to a colleague, a student in need. Yes, the job of a law professor truly is the best job in the world. There are many ways where being a dean of a law school also provides us with some of those privileges that we have as law professors, but they are different. Dean Jeremy Paul from Northeastern and a number of other schools is a very good friend and a wonderful role model, put it best to me. He said that he has never been in a position to help others as much as he had the opportunity to help others when he was dean, and that he cherished those experiences and got a lot out of being able to be of service to students and to colleagues. And I completely agree with Jeremy's assessment.
That's such an interesting place to wrap up and end, because Jeremy brought you and I onto the,
yes,
the Journal of Legal Education.
Yes, he did.
When we both thought, oh my goodness, how are we going to do this? But his leadership and partnership made it easy.
That's right.
Tony, it is great to see you. You have sold Seattle as a city and as a law school. So if Bob and I knock on your door, tell John just to open it.
Come visit us, everybody.
Yeah, because we would love to see you.
Yes.
And please know that we wish you all of the success going forward.
Thank you all so very much, BJ, Linda, David. Thank you all very, very much.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thanks so much for listening. We look forward to speaking with you again in our next episode of Talking Legal Ed.
Talking Legal Ed is produced by David Ritchie in association with Panopticon Media. Editing by Tim Spieshock and artwork by Kaylee Jellum. Please look for all our episodes wherever you find your podcasts.